Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Blind Vine. You know, I'll never get it right. Half the time I say it one way, and half the time I say it the other. In any event, welcome to this week's Blind Vine. We have lots of fun things for you. We have some ragtime. We have some talk. We have a number of great things. And as always, we're coming to you from beautiful and today sunny and warm downtown San Francisco. It's great to be with you here from the Flood Building at the corner of Market and Powell, the busiest intersection on the west coast of the United States. We'll be with you in a moment for today's program. I'd like to begin the program for today by asking you a question. Do you notice anything, or did you notice anything different about the theme song we just played, Belle of Louisville, from what we normally play, which is the same song? I've been on the air long enough that some of you may have familiarity with how it sounds and what you might expect to hear, and I'm wondering if today you think you heard anything different. And if you don't think you did, you're not a very good listener. Oh, no, I never said that. I would never say something like that about the audience. Several things to talk about today. I would love to get any feedback from people who have been listening to the European Blind Union. And isn't it great that ACB Radio can broadcast that program all the way from Turkey and let us hear more about what people are doing in the European Blind Union. They are probably the most active division of WBU and certainly have a huge number of interested, dedicated, and at moments vocal membership in the European Blind Union. So we had a chance on Monday and Tuesday to hear the various programs partially regarding issues for the elderly and a number of excellent programs on diversity and women's concerns. So I hope you all have had a chance to take some of that in, and it's not over yet. So you could take in repeats this evening or other programs as time goes on. You're listening to Blind Vine on ACB Radio Mainstream. The phone number here, should you wish to call, area code 888-881-1998. That's area code 888-881-1998. A lot of eights in there, but I won't say it all funny to confuse you. 888-881-1998. The broadcast of the European Blind Union certainly was a great thing for ACB Radio to put on, and we have some upcoming conventions that are going to be on ACB Radio as well. Beginning this weekend on Friday at approximately 1 p.m., none other than our own ACB Radio Marlena Lieberg will have flown down to San Francisco, hopped off the old broomstick and got into the hotel, and will be broadcasting the entire convention of CCB for our fall Southern California convention. You can hear how we do elections on Friday night, if that's of interest to you. You can even hear who gets elected, and that might be of greater interest to you than the procedures of how conventions are done. In any event, you can hear our Friday afternoon opening session. Friday evening, President Jeff Tom, usually tries to have some special guest speaker or other to excite the audience. And, of course, elections doesn't hurt either. Saturday, we have small group meetings in the morning, but come back into main session in the afternoon. Yours truly will be moderating that session. And so I would hope that anyone listening to this program would go and listen to the whole afternoon session. It's bound to be exciting, right? Saturday evening, we will broadcast the banquet, and on Sunday morning, from approximately 9 until we finish, or 12 o'clock, whichever comes first, we'll broadcast the business session where the membership considers resolutions, legislative report, all that kind of material that we all handle at our state conventions. So that's the CCB convention this week. The following week, I believe we have what may be a first for ACB Radio, and that is that we have two conventions to be broadcast. So that'll be great fun, and maybe you can find a way, at least the techies among you, to listen to one in the left speaker and one in the right speaker. You can hear many activities from the Washington Council of the Blind, as well as the Pennsylvania Council of the Blind. And I'm sure the relatively new president in Pennsylvania is getting geared up for this, maybe feeling a little bit of trepidation, so you might want to join that conference and root for Pennsylvania, cheer them on as their president goes through what I believe is the first convention. The Red Sox. What can I say? Go Red Sox. We had some punctuating of board activities following the baseball games and so forth, and that was good and fun, and we all enjoyed that. And there was a time when one might have thought the Indians would win, but it didn't end up turning out that way. Well, we can take your calls for another minute or two at area code 888-881-1998. That's a toll-free call for you. And after that, I'm going to drop away for some program material for probably about 33 minutes. During that time, you could call me, but you won't be on the air because we'll be listening to a pre-recorded program. Not much else going on today to talk about. We will be having a telephone conference call board meeting this coming Monday evening, and the primary purpose of that is just to tidy up some loose ends from the board meeting we held weekend before last, and to hear some reports that weren't finalized during our meeting at that time. It is my hope that you will have heard, or that if you haven't heard, I can present to you some good news from that board meeting, but let's wait and see what happens when we get together. I plan to broadcast next Wednesday, and then we'll be shooting off on Thursday to Washington State for the WCB convention. Maybe this weekend I'll have a chance to help Marlena with some coverage of CCB, and I might drop by Viola's booth the next weekend, which will be exciting as well. Well, we have our first call. One moment. Good afternoon. You're on Blind Vine. I'm your host, Chris Gray. Who's calling?
Chris.
Yes.
Hi, this is Eli. I'm sorry, I was supposed to be over there this morning, I know. But I got a call from my boss and, early this morning that he needed my help over at this job site. So I'm back in the city now. If it's okay with you, it shouldn't take me that long. I'm a few blocks away, and I can get over there and complete this for you.
Sure, well, it's up to you. Entirely up to you.
I want to get it over with.
Yeah.
But,
okay. Well, you feel free. If you want to go ahead and drop by, that would be just fine.
Okay, thanks. And I'll be up on my way.
Okay.
All right, thanks.
Thanks a lot. Bye. Now, there's a case of needing a totally separate phone line. Eli's a good guy. If you need a plumber, call Eli. If you're not in San Francisco, he may not show up. If you're in San Francisco, he may not show up. But as many of you may know, or as I'll tell the rest of you, Marvelyn and I live in a two-floor building, and the people downstairs have a condominium home, and we have one upstairs. Understandably, they became a little upset when part of their bathroom ceiling came down 2 weeks ago, accompanied by quite a lot of water. Well, you know what happens then. You got to get the plumber in. You got to find the leak. It took 2 days to find the leak, and it turns out this has probably been something going on for 4-5 years. Very slow leak, very difficult to find. In any event, we did find it. Then we found Eli, who has turned out to be a great plumber, and you just met him. So, how nice. That wasn't quite what I had in mind, but never mind. As I said to you, I've got a prepared program for today, and that program is about another ragtime pianist. I kind of got on this ragtime theme a while ago and don't seem to be able to get away from it. So I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, I had a program on James P. Johnson, a very well-known ragtime pianist, recorded quite a bit and so forth. I thought then I would step back and begin to think about the earliest ragtime composers, ragtime players, and present to you information about some of those folks. I haven't yet identified a blind ragtime pianist with material that I can easily get or that did recordings of material. I'm looking, thinking a great deal about that, and hope to do it in the near future. But today, I'm going to, for about the next half hour, introduce you, turn you on to, extend your knowledge about the second most revered ragtime pianist from the United States. He was the son of slave parents, taught informally first by his mother to play the piano and the chord organ, and got a little bit of training after that from elsewhere, and became a great ragtime composer. We can't say a lot about his musicianship other than what was written at the time, but you can hear a lot about his music in the next half hour. So with no further ado, let me break away and present to you the program material prepared for the ragtime composer James Scott. There's no question that Scott Joplin is the number one ragtime composer of all time. Scott Joplin's well known to us, maybe most of all, either because of the movie The Sting or because of the Maple Leaf Rag. The Maple Leaf Rag is one of the most played ragtime songs of all history. So if Scott Joplin is number one, who then is number two? And I could even say, who is number three? Who are the top three ragtime composers that are viewed by critics as being the best. Number two is James Scott, and number three is Joseph Lamb. Neither of them household words, are they? Well, in any event, today we're going to feature the life and the music of James Scott on Blind Vine. And to get started with this, let me present to you a biographical sketch of the composer. I've asked my assistant, Gene Powell, to read this biographical sketch, and here she is, Gene Powell.
James Scott, the man and the composer. The best account of James Scott's life appears in Rudy Blesch and Harriet Janis's classic ragtime work, They All Played Ragtime, originally published in 1950 and now in its fourth printing. Scott, the one native Missourian of the three top ragtime composers, Scott Joplin and Joseph Lamb were the others, was born in Neosho in southwest Missouri in 1886. In about 1899, the family moved to Ottawa, Kansas. Young Scott's first keyboard instrument was the family reed organ, as was the case with other pioneer ragtimers, including U.B. Blake. Scott received lessons in Ottawa, and when the family moved to Carthage, Missouri, a short time later, his father bought him a piano. In 1903, at age 16, James began to earn money washing windows for a local Carthage music store, Dumars Music Company. The owner soon discovered Scott's syncopated gifts and quickly promoted him to waiting on customers and demonstrating the latest sheet music on the piano. This is very likely how Scott was introduced to the rags of Scott Joplin. He began writing his own rags and marches. Dumars, in fact, published Scott's first three numbers, On the Pike, A Summer Breeze, and The Fascinator. But Dumars was not a major publisher. Their total known output comprises six numbers, and in 1906, James Scott sought out composer Scott Joplin and publisher John Stark. His trip to St. Louis that year and the meeting that resulted impressed both Joplin and Stark. Stark began by publishing Frog Legs Rag in that year, and thereafter he published nearly all of Scott's rags. Scott left Carthage and Dumars in 1914 and moved to Kansas City, Missouri, where he married and established himself as a music teacher. He became an organist at the Panama Theater in 1916, a position he held for some 10 years. He continued to send rags to St. Louis, and Stark published them until 1922, the final days of the firm's publishing of new material. Most of the tunes were mailed in untitled. John Stark probably picked the titles himself. In Scott's later years, he continued to teach, play solo jobs, and work in orchestras in several Kansas City theaters until the advent of sound movies forced him out of that business. After his wife died, Scott continued to improvise rags of increasing complexity, although his fingers were swollen from chronic dropsy, which made performing painful. He died August 30, 1938, at the age of 52. Scott was the one composer of the Big Three who remained a professional performer all his life, and he had to be the most proficient pianist of all the classic rag composers. Both his harmonies and melodies foretold ideas which became staples in the professional pop music mainstream of the 1920s. But at the same time, his rags have the folk richness and impressive power of immortal classic ragtime. More than Joplin's or Lamb's, Scott's rags have a spontaneity and a dramatic, monumental, expansive keyboard approach that reflect an active performer. The Joplin-Lamb flair for contrasting themes and minute detail is quite different from Scott's developmental approach. Though ragtime is thematic, as opposed to a developmental music such as jazz, Scott achieved a subtle theme and variations feeling in his rags. As Schaefer and Rydell observe in The Art of Ragtime, Scott's tunes frequently evolve from one sustained mood or idea. This was Scott's forte and the real foundation of his contribution to ragtime. Though Stark called him the Chopin of ragtime, he was probably more of a Liszt. One overall shortcoming of James Scott's music is that his output lacks the variety of either Joplin or Lamb, because he was less concerned with exploring the evolution of ragtime. In his later years, he tended to use the same phrases over and over. Still, he conceived masterpieces of staggering beauty, and he is justly considered second only to Joplin in greatness. Lamb, in fact, was influenced by Scott's expansive keyboard work. Lamb's idea for Ragtime Nightingale was inspired by Scott's Ragtime Oriole.
There you have the biography and even a bit of musical criticism for the composer. And unfortunately, I've done quite a bit of research talking with even people at Library of Congress. We went to some Kansas City websites, some various jazz websites. It seems pretty clear that no real recordings were ever made by James Scott. It's unfortunate, but not entirely surprising either. There are, though, many piano rolls that have been transcribed, and we're going to hear some of those today, as well as many ragtime pianists who have decided to make recordings of James Scott as well. So there's a lot of things to listen to, and before we actually hear some music, let me play you some information from a compact disc about how the rolls themselves were made, and then a description of the first song that we'll hear.
The Rolls and the Rags. The early rolls, both 65 and 88 note, were produced by transferring the notes in the sheet music and in special embellished written arrangements into corresponding slots in the master rolls. Thus, these rolls, because they were mathematically produced using scales and rulers, are called arranged rolls. While they may be smooth enough to sound as if they might be hand-played, they are not. Few ragtime rolls, in fact, were true recordings by real pianists, because the hand-played recording process began to emerge in 1912 and 1913, near the end of ragtime's boom period. Only one roll on this CD is hand-played, Honeymoon Rag. James Scott himself made no piano rolls. If he did, there is no evidence they were ever issued, and the output of most roll companies is known through the catalogs they issued. Performer though he simply was not close to Chicago or New York, where the major roll firms were headquartered. But even though most rolls on this CD are not hand-played, they warrant reissuing today because they represent the way these rags were originally listened to and enjoyed on home player pianos. Most of these rolls are additionally interesting because they differ slightly from the published sheet music. Frog Legs, Scott's first rag to be published by John Stark, is a clear break from Scott's earlier dependence on Joplin's influence. While Joplin's shadow is still present, the sweeping melodic line, abrupt register shifts, and dramatic syncopated phrasing are pure James Scott. The last half of the rag seems a variation on the first half. The trio C develops a beautiful rolling melodic line from the eccentric one of A, while D continues the lyricism and is punctuated with a Scott hallmark, the echo or call and response effect of repeating a brief phrase an octave higher. Frog Legs establishes many stylistic features of the composer, and it was a huge commercial success.
And now, with no further ado, let's go to the first song, Frog Leg Rags, that you just heard Gene reading about. It was written in 1906, and this recording is done on a 65-key roll played on a 1910 Wurlitzer player piano. Frog Legs Rag by James Scott. ¶¶ For our second piece, we're going to listen to some commentary about Hilarity Rag, and then hear the piano roll of Hilarity Rag. After the piano roll, I'm going to play for you a recording made by Frank French of the same rag, but on a new piano using more modern recording techniques and so forth. So let's go right away to Hilarity Rag.
Hilarity Rag is a masterpiece and a brilliant conception. After A, he weaves a thick texture spiced with much chromaticism. This development continues with the trio, and the D section, in vivid contrast, breaks away to end the rag in a stomping ride-out.
French version of the same song, Hilarity Rag, in this presentation of Ragtime Piano on ACB Radio Mainstream, the voice of the blind community.
Thank you.
Now we're going to hear a James Scott composition called Don't Jazz Me, written in 1921. This is actually a protest against jazz that was coming up and pushing ragtime aside, and is a later piece by James Scott. It's played by Frank French, Don't Jazz Me. Earlier in the program, you heard some discussion of Ragtime Oriole, another composition of James Scott's, and I thought we would play that now. I wish I had the corresponding recording of Lambs to play at the same time, but we can do that another week, perhaps. But here is James Scott from a piano roll doing the Ragtime Oriole after you hear Gene Reed the liner notes about that piece.
Schaefer and Rydell feel the eccentric, lyrical, melodic line of Ragtime Oriole is a subtle exposition of bird calls. An interesting touch is the interpolation in D of a characteristically Midwestern blues piano lick on an ascending circle of fifths and connected with chromatic runs. It's one of the few Scott rags to restate the A theme at the end.
Thank you.
Normally on this program we present a song called Climax Rag, written in 1914. Here again is Gene to read you about it. And then, in the interest of time, I will only present today the Frank French version of this song. If I get huge numbers of requests, we can always go back and play the piano roll at some other time.
Climax Rag may have derived from Scott's career as a silent movie accompanist. Some of the ideas here recall Hilarity Rag, and the overall sound suggests restlessness, a bold, straightforward energy and grace that are Scott hallmarks. Stark said this of Climax: "Scott's name on a rag is like Rockefeller's name on a check. It is legal tender. This is Scott's latest, but no person will look for the date of a Scott rag. They will go echoing down the corridors of time when the season's hits have long been forgotten." Unquote.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, a quick tour through the musical compositions of the ragtime pianist James Scott. If you enjoyed this program, please let me know. If you want to hear other ragtime composers and or pianists, let me know that as well. You're listening to Blind Vine on ACB Radio Mainstream, the voice of the blind community. This is your host, Chris Gray. Well, wasn't that fun? Several piano pieces, old and new. I don't know how you feel, those of you who either play the piano or who like to listen to the piano. Me, I'm a listener. But, you know, it's wonderful to hear the old roles because they give you at least, you know, some sense of the music. But I'd always wondered why it was that there were these kind of timing problems in piano rolls and how they could kind of, well, I knew how they could speed up and slow down because that's a function of your pedaling the piano. And in the piano that was used for these rolls, it was a piano that had to be pedaled. You couldn't hear it in the recording, but it mentioned that in some of the notes that I didn't have read for this broadcast. Anyway, so you can easily imagine that there'd be some changes in speed, but there are cadence problems in the rolls as well that couldn't be speed related. And so I think that it's interesting to hear that description of how the rolls actually were made. In the Library of Congress, they have a great deal of James Scott's sheet music, and there's a good bit of it reproduced in ragtime books, which is interesting. As I say, I did check with the Library of Congress, thinking they might know of any interview or any radio broadcast or something that would have the musician actually playing, but unfortunately nothing like that was available. It's kind of amazing to me. I mean, no recording exists that has ever been located of Scott Joplin playing the piano, and one can kind of understand that because he died in the late 19-teens somewhere, I believe. But you would think that a pianist of this notoriety who lived until 1938 would have been recorded somewhere. Well, apparently not. I'll keep looking, and if anyone out there is aware of anything that might be available, let me know. I'd be curious to follow any leads and find out what goes. As I say also, I'm looking seriously for a known blind ragtime pianist to feature. And I've actually got some good leads on that. But more, the people I know of are more contemporary than early ragtime pianists. And so I'm looking first for original pianists. Now, another thing to be delved into at some point are the huge number of guitar blues players from the 20s, 30s, and 40s that have been recorded, and many of whom have had at least some biographical data collected on them. One of the more prolific, popular, and famous, of course, would be Blind Willie McTell. There are others as well. I mean, there's, my gosh, Blind Lemon Jefferson, Blind Willie Johnson, all kind of names can come to my mind if I think about it for a second or two. But that would be a project that would take quite a bit of time. I've had an idea, a long-standing idea, to do a whole series of programs on those blind musicians. It's more ambitious than what I'm doing here and takes more time, and that may be why I've never gotten around to it. Maybe one of these days when I have more time I'll get around to it. But anyway, if you have thoughts about that or interest in it, let me know. And there's no reason that could not, you know, come up into, you know, more modern times. We have well, of course, everybody pretty much, I think, knows about George Shearing, Ray Charles, musicians like that. But, what about the, his name escapes me at the moment, the blind Canadian rock guitar player. He's a great guitarist and ought to be showcased at some point. So that would be one thematic way that I could go on this program and on other types of broadcasts as well. In about 3 weeks, I will try and pull together a program, and I really probably ought to do Scott Joplin next. I'm hunting around verifying the research I've done previously about there being no recording of him available. And then we can do Joseph Lamb, so we have the top three covered, and see where to go from there. Jelly Roll Morton, a lot of great stuff recorded by him, and there are even those great Library of Congress recordings that he made himself, talking and bragging and being truly obnoxious at times, but he was quite a character, and very much revered as he ought to be in the world of ragtime, stride, and other similar kinds of piano playing. Another person, of course, would be Fats Waller. Any series like this ought to have something by him. And so those are my thoughts at the moment. I will be announcing in a few days a series of programs as well on Blind Vine about working from home. I'm just getting that put together, getting the final touches, putting on that. We're going to do at least two programs and perhaps three on ideas about working from home, and I hope that you may find that useful, exciting, lucrative, any of those things that you might want. Okay, well, we have the California Convention coming up, as I mentioned, Washington and Pennsylvania next week, and so things are moving along very nicely. Once again, be sure and spend at least a little bit of time over on ACB Radio World, taking in the European Blind Union. It's a beautiful sounding broadcast, very informative, and it's one of the first broadcasts that we have done using our new audio quality that is so great on the newest ACB server. We know that those who are working on getting the server up and going will keep getting us more and more of this great quality broadcasting that we have on ACB Radio World. Well, folks, this brings us near to the end of another edition of Blind Vine. I'll be back next week with convention news, with board news. I will not have time to prepare another musical program between now and then, I don't think. If I do, I'd be kind of shocked. But I'm not really expecting to be able to do that. In any event, that will give you time to give me more input, and that will be most appreciated. This is Chris Gray in San Francisco, California, your host for Blind Vine. I get the name right most of the time, but not always. And it's been a pleasure to be with you tonight. Hope your week goes well, and we'll see you again here next week on ACB Radio Mainstream, the voice of the blind community. Thank you, and good night.